This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And welcome to the Total Saints podcast, our weekly get-together discussing all things Southampton Football Club. We're live streaming our podcast on Facebook, Twitter, Twitch and YouTube. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure that you subscribe to the channel to be the first to see our latest videos. As always, a massive thank you to our TSP patrons who support all that we do. You can visit patreon.com/Total Saints podcast to find out more about getting involved. Coming up this week on the pod, it's finally flushed. Saints' 11-year run in the Premier League ended in tame fashion with relegation confirmed after defeat at home to Fulham. Let me tell you, tonight's guests are like three coiled springs ready to unleash. Unfortunately, there are still two games left to play slash suffer. The next is a short trip to Brighton this weekend, so we'll preview that game for you as well. My name's Martin Stark, and I'm joined this week by Steve Grant, the owner of Saints Web, Glenda the Core, the writer of the blog League One Minus 10, and Jacob Tanswell, Southampton reporter for The Athletic. Underpinned by our TSP patrons, this is episode 233 of the Total Saints podcast.
Your home for everything Southampton FC, from dedicated Saints insight to exclusive interviews. Live on YouTube every Sunday and available to download wherever you listen to your podcasts. This is the Total Saints podcast.
So there we have it, down and out without as much as a whimper, with relegation from the Premier League confirmed at the full-time whistle yesterday, that 2-0 home defeat to Fulham. We'll get on to that in good time. Glenn, this could be the audiobook version of your blog, really, the next 45 minutes. But I'm going to start with, how does this compare for you to 2005 and the last time?
2005, even though we had Harry Redknapp as a manager, we at least tried and we took it to the last day. And I think, you know, I think if we'd have beaten Man United on the last day and the results had gone with us, we would have stayed up. I mean, it didn't turn out that way, because if you look at who was in the 2005 Manchester United side, they were rather good. As far as I remember off the top of my head, it was, you know, it was Roy Keane, Cristiano Ronaldo, Ruud van Nistelrooy, players like that. So,
well, van Nistelrooy got the winner, didn't he, I think?
Yeah. So it was, and we had Nigel Kwasi playing for us, which kind of says it all. It was never really going to happen, was it? So that one was, that one felt worse because it was 27 years, I think. We'd been in the top flight, and it was a bit, you know, it was on top of us moving to St Mary's, and St Mary's was supposed to provide the lift that meant we weren't a relegation threatened sort of club anymore. So, yeah, that didn't happen and we went down. So that to me felt worse. Maybe, you know, I mean, how long ago was it? 18 years ago. So maybe now being 18 years older, you're a little bit more, or I'm a little bit more whatever about it. But I mean, yesterday's game, we'll get onto that, but that was the whole season in a nutshell, wasn't it? It was just crap. Just a dreadful game. Nothing happened. Boring. And we lost again. So the relegation in 2005, we wrote the book on sort of how to get relegated. Three managers in one season. bad transfer windows, all this sort of stuff. And we've updated the book this time around. And we've, you know, but that season, you know, like in January, we didn't spend any money. We just, I think we were frightened what Harry Redknapp was going to do with it. But we didn't spend any money. We just got a couple of loan players in and we were always going to struggle. And so it turned out it shouldn't have been that way this season. I can't remember what the, you know, the strength of the bottom half of the division was like in 2005. But this year, as it's been well documented, it's been rubbish. And it should have been relatively easy to win three or four more games. But when you look at it, we're going to end up with 24 points because I can't see us getting another point. And that is appalling. I mean, what's the lowest ever?
11.
Oh, 11, is it? Oh,
was it Derby County?
Yeah. I thought it was 19 for some reason, but
Sunderland, I think, might have got 19 one of their terrible seasons. Yeah, I think they've had a 15 as well. So yeah, we're not the worst by any stretch, but based on kind of vague sort of expectations of at least basic competence, yeah, we've not even come close, have we?
No. I mean, 24 points. It's just embarrassing, isn't it? I mean, just for a bit of a comparison, do you remember the Claude Puel season when everyone kicked off, including me, because the football was rubbish, basically? I think he got 48 points.
Yep.
That's double what we've got this season. So that shows how bad this has been. It's easily our worst season in the Premier League or in the top division, certainly since the 3 points for a win came in. Yeah. And it's been awful. So, but, you know, for a lot of people, this will be their first, as supporters, this will be their first sort of relegation. So I do understand why, you know, people younger than me are taking it so hard. But it is, you know, the Championship's not all bad.
It's not all good either.
No, it's not all good either. But I remember the first game in the Championship when we got relegated before, we had, do you remember the right back with the long hair, Alexander Ostlund?
He was
mad, wasn't he? And I remember him getting booted in the face in the first game. And
they used to call him Jesus, didn't they? Was that
him? He just got up and got on with it. So there is more of that. There's less of the prima donna stuff.
Yeah.
Hopefully that hasn't changed, and it's you know, it's still combative without all the bits that you don't like in the Premier League. So I mean, it's hard to believe now, but you know, you got to believe we will win more than six games next year, and we'll score more than the 12 goals or whatever it is we've scored. So there are some things to look forward to, but there's a lot of pain to go through before then.
It was one of my thoughts today. I'm just desperate to see my club win a game of football. It's been that long. I've forgotten what it's like, and I just hope it comes sooner rather than later. Steve, you've had a few hours, 24 hours or so to mull it over. What's your overriding emotion at the moment?
Boredom,
apathy.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, I think we've all kind of at various stages in the last 4 or 5 months or so accepted that we are more than likely to go down, but there was always kind of a glimmer, I think, probably up until Monday night, really. Weirdly, in a game where we actually picked the team that most of us would have picked and kind of played all right. And you kind of thought, well, if we'd kind of done that for most of the season, then perhaps we wouldn't be marooned at the bottom of the league. But my God, yesterday was dull as hell, wasn't it? There was just nothing going on, no appetite to even bother getting out of second gear. And that goes for Fulham as well. But then they kind of probably felt they didn't need to, because we've all seen this playbook dozens of times this season already. Kind of vaguely keep the game tight in the first half. Not really an awful lot going on from either side. And then first time the opposition try and run at us in the second half, we concede and we collapse in a heap, and that's that. That's game over. And yeah, Fulham had their game plan kind of nailed in that respect. It was very comfortable from their part, and they didn't even need Mitrovic to come on, really. They could have quite happily left him stewing on the bench and let the guys that have taken up the slack in his absence carry on. But no, they brought him on, and he obviously got his customary goal. And yeah, it was very much just a feeling of, why are we bothering? I mean, I don't know what the sort of pre-match sales figures were, but I imagine there were a lot of people who had either match tickets or season tickets who just didn't bother turning up yesterday.
Did you stay to the end yesterday? What was it like when that full-time whistle went?
It was odd. It was very, very strange. I mean, obviously, sort of a sort of chorus of boos from the, it's probably about half the ground that was maybe just under half the ground that was still left in there at full time. So a chorus of boos from everybody. But then the reaction was just baffling from kind of everybody. When the players sort of started going round on this, I mean, rather apt, half-arsed lap of honour, there was a distinct mixture from, certainly from the Northern where I was, of like a volley of abuse from various quarters. But then you kind of looked around and there were groups of people that were giving them a round of applause for this sort of noble lap of non-appreciation. And it was just like, have you been watching this for the last 18 months? How does any of this justify any sort of, I mean, especially the 90 minutes today, how has any of that justified any sort of applause or, I mean, even basic sympathy? It was just garbage. And that's kind of football fan bases in a nutshell, really, in that nobody can ever agree on one position to take. And as a result, football clubs will always prey on that and will make stupid decisions, make decisions that kind of aren't in the interests of fans, vis-a-vis ticket pricing, allocations, that sort of thing, because they know that there's enough people that will just happily go along with whatever the club says as if it's just gospel. So yeah, it was a very strange 5 minutes or so after the game once they sort of embarked on that sort of weird sort of loop round part of the ground. But I mean, to be honest, if I was them, I wouldn't have bothered. It's not, I mean, what's, they knew what the reaction was likely to be from a lot of people. So kind of, what's the point? Why stick your head above there to just get a volume of abuse?
You're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't, I guess.
Yeah, to an extent. I mean, at the end of the day, if, I mean, after yesterday, I'm kind of more along the lines of, well, whichever ones of these guys are out the door in the summer, I couldn't give a toss.
Yeah, yeah.
There's just, I mean, yesterday when, I mean, yes, I know it was kind of all but done, but surely there's professional pride among those players. And I mean, even the ones like Walcott, who's been one of our better players this calendar year. I mean, what was that? I mean, there was that one touch in the first half where he went to lay it off to Walker Peters and he misplaced it by about 20 yards. And it just seemed as if it was just such a lazy touch. And it was just like, oh, come on, lads, really? Are we down? Is this the point at which we're downing, visually downing tools?
We were talking last week, weren't we, about what we wanted to see and what we expected to see from the players for the last three games. And some of it was, well, we want to see them put a few things right. We want to see their attitude, their application. We want to see those that want to be there. And I think, well, last week, I think we said we'll be lucky if we see any of that. So to a certain extent, you know, we were right. Jacob, this has been your first season covering Southampton for The Athletic. So do you think you need to shoulder some of the blame here?
Yeah, I think so.
Apportioning out blame.
Yeah, you think, you know, 10, 11 years in the Premier League, I've had a season ticket for 9 of them. And it's typical that I get this job when everything goes wrong. And there's an absolute circus, really, just after relative stability for the other part of the decade. Yeah, at the full time was sort of strange because, you know, I probably came to terms with relegation probably in January, maybe. I thought, yeah, this is probably untenable now. I thought it might be a little brief renaissance with the new signings, but I think, you know, I saw the Brentford game where, you know, obviously Nathan Jones had this meltdown and everything after that, and I thought, oh, it's going to be difficult because these players aren't capable of going on any consistent run, and I think you probably have to get back-to-back wins to really dig your way out of it. But even still, at the full-time whistle, I just felt really just drained, and I had to sit there for a while because I just, you know, I got a little bit emotional, to be honest. I was just thinking, what am I watching now? Like, these players, I have some memories of that relegation, the previous one, and I remember there's a bit of fight. I remember David Pratt in that season, obviously pushing over the linesman and things like that, just thinking there was a bit of character. Things were going wrong, but you know, they took it to the final day. They fought a little bit. Well, this just felt, I just felt like, wow, is this what the club is now? You know, people are leaving, people that really, you know, aren't really caring, they're apathetic. These players on the pitch, you look at who sat in the obviously the owner's box, you think it's an absolute collective responsibility. And yeah, I just felt really drained. And even afterwards, in the press conference room, and you know, Sellers was his shortest press conference ever, really, and that's a surprise considering how big a issue this or relegation is. And I just think everyone come to terms with it, where no one had anything left, and it was just such a huge shame. And yeah, I think football works in cycles, and Southampton, a club of Southampton's stature, will have highs and lows. But if they were going to go out, I would have liked to have thought it would have gone a little bit better than this. And the fact that not many people, well, who I've spoken to, were that emotional about it, probably sums up that everyone came to terms with it a long time ago. And for a team that wants to fight tooth and nail to get out of relegation, as you know, which as Southampton fans we all want, I think it was a dismal showing, and that, especially that first goal of Fulham's, probably just completely sums up that season.
Yeah, I've heard that said a lot actually since then. Glenn, I kind of felt like, I know, like, we had it coming, and we've been flirting with relegation for a few years now. I'm just angry the more I think about it, because it was so avoidable. If you think about when we slipped into the relegation places, I think it was the 6th of November, and we've been there ever since. So that's even, you know, 2 months before the January transfer window opens, you've got the World Cup break going on. There was plenty of opportunity, in my mind, to put this right, and they've not done it.
No, they haven't at all. And if you appoint two appalling managers in a row in the same season, you've had it. You know, you're never going to get out of it. But this group of players, even if you go back a couple of seasons, whenever they had a chance to do something positive, like, you know, even break into the top six or break into the top half or whatever it was, they always failed. Every single time, it was like the mentality's not there to push themselves further to actually achieve something. So looking back now, I mean, yeah, we ended up in the relegation zone in November. I think we went bottom pretty soon into Nathan Jones's
tenure. Was it Boxing Day? Yeah, it was those games and after Boxing Day.
I think we got up to 19th once. When we beat Leicester, I think we went above Bournemouth for 1 week. And then 3 weeks later, Bournemouth were 10 points ahead of us. So, you know, that's kind of the way it's been. So yeah, I hadn't really thought about that, but yeah, it's no surprise to me that we have not even raised a jog, really, to try and get out of the relegation zone. I just, you know, just don't think the mentality is there in the club, and that's top to bottom, to fight their way out of a paper bag. Basically, they just don't have it in them, and that is something that's got to change. And you know, I mean, I was thinking about this. If we went into next season with the same squad, I know it's not going to happen, but if we went in with the same squad and the same manager, I don't reckon we'd finish in the top half.
We're not going to string a run of three wins together, are we, if that happens?
No, we, because this group are so weak. You know, they're just not, they're just, there's not a functioning team there. There's not a functioning collective there. There's the odd individual decent player, as we all know, but Sellers has been there all year, right from the start, in various roles. He's had 15 games. We probably only needed to win 5 of them. But I mean, for me, the worst bit was the Nathan Jones bit. We just wasted 8 games that were all potential games we could have got points in. So, you know, replacing Ralph with him and then replacing him with Sellers has just killed the whole thing, really. And I'm not surprised that, looking back now, that we didn't escape the bottom three, or even look like escaping the bottom three. I think we're confirmed last now, aren't we? So even if by some miracle we do win both games, which of course we won't, we are confirmed flat last. So something in the bag that we've got to take into next season.
It's very rare, Steve, isn't it, that three managers in a season works out for anybody. Two poor managerial appointments this year for us. Maybe, certainly, I think one that should have gone in the summer. Is that hesitation, do you think, that not getting rid of Ralph when they weren't going to back him? Do you think that has led to partly to where we are today and the discord in the dressing room?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of think that, I mean, my personal view at the time was that Ralph had shown enough positive work over the previous 3.5 years that he deserved a crack of it, with us actually able to spend some money. And they let him down by not buying him the centre forward that we needed. Obviously, we were in for two or three options that, on the face of it, their records beforehand and since probably would have done the job for us. And we would have then been absolutely fine. And then, I mean, this conversation then is a completely different one, isn't it? But given that the sort of split According to Jacob, from Jacob's article, the split of those who kind of had a say on the managerial situation in the summer, given that it was split so tightly down the middle, I mean, they've obviously decided to stick with the status quo. Whereas I think in that situation, if you have effectively half of your executive board not confident in the current guy in charge, then I think you've got to then have the balls to say, nope, sorry, we're gonna have to make the change now. Because let's be honest, you're more likely to find a top manager in the summer who's going to want to take on the role than halfway through the season when you're frantically scrambling and you then go after all kinds of desperate sort of options, as we ended up doing. I mean, we've picked a guy who was absolutely hopeless, who had no track record that he was ever going to be able to do the job for us. We've spent millions of pounds bringing him in, and he's then gone and rubbed salt in the wounds by doing his first press interview on the day we get relegated, which I'm pretty sure will have been choreographed on his part. That's the sort of ego that has. So we've kind of walked into this head first.
He admitted yesterday there are things that he would have done differently. This was Nathan Jones on Sky Sports yesterday afternoon.
Stayed at Luton.
I think he was on right, to talk about the Luton game, wasn't he? And then ended up obviously being dragged into talking about Southampton. So it just, yeah, it wasn't what I wanted to hear or see his face on the telly yesterday and hear him. But so, I mean, Jacob, obviously the other thing that is going to come up time and time again with all these articles and all these conversations that we're going to have post-relegation is the player recruitment. And that, you can't, there's no two ways about it. Maybe one player, it's worked out, but the rest has just been horrendous.
Yeah, I think it's been the theme throughout this season, really, in terms of obviously the imbalance. We can talk about imbalance of youth and inexperience. And I think from a sport published perspective, they'll say, you know, we've actually bought experience. We've got Orsic in, Saleta Sarr. Have these been successful? But then on the flip side, my argument would be, if you are going to bring experienced players in, make sure they're Premier League proven. For example, in the summer, Southampton had the option to buy get in for free, Connor Cody, at times Tyrone Mings, when Steven Gerrard was casting him out of the way. And they didn't get any of those three, despite efforts from certain people in the club to get Connor Cody or whatever. The Sport Republic, ultimately, with Joe Shields as well at the time, went for Saleta Sarr, who is 20, 25, 26, but he's not got Premier League experience, and he's not going to provide that backbone to supplement these young players. And if you say, okay, Lavia, Armel Belakotchuk were good, Bazunu will probably, hopefully, come good. You then go into the January recruitment where Joe Shields has gone. The people in the club, the staff, are becoming disillusioned because they're slowly starting to see what the strategy is, or the lack of strategy is. A lot of people still at the club who are not sure what the strategy is, which I look forward to seeing what they say it is come the end of season when they sit down with the media, Sport Republic, that is. And then they go into the January window and Russell Zankerson leads it. And he goes off for a month. No one really knows what he's up to. And he signs these players. And I can, obviously, they like to say that a lot of it's data-led, because Henrik Kraft and Rasmus Ankersen weren't happy at all with the existing infrastructure. They said it was too old school. They thought it was quite rudimentary. And that's the reason why these failed recruitments predated this summer. But at the same time, they've ended up with a signing called Paul Onuachu, who Rasmus Ankersen knows well from his time at Midtjylland, who can't press, can't really run unless he's got people around him, and he plays completely different to how Southampton want to play.
He's got the first touch of an average Sunday league player.
That's your words, but not mine. But I wouldn't, from the outside, I would look at it and think that's data led. I don't think the data would particularly show favourable for him. And then you have Mislav Orsic, who, you know, he could be a good player, but at the same time, people said this to me at the time, very good player for a team that keeps possession, very possession-based, because he's not the quickest, he's not great on the counter, but he works combinations in and around, you know, with fullbacks, with people, similar to like a Jadon Sancho, for example. But under Nathan Jones and Sellers, they don't really have the ball much. They don't really want the ball. So that didn't work. And I don't think that showed up on the data. It's not the issue whether these players are good, it's do they fit? And I don't personally think a lot of these players do. You know, Charlie Alcaraz is probably one that they'll look at and they're going to think, well, that's going to be a fantastic signing for years to come. But they've hemorrhaged and wasted a lot of money this season. And I think it's partly through recruitment, but it's also through scouts centralising the system, becoming disillusioned. You know, Tom Stockwell, like we said in the piece yesterday, he was in charge of moving all the scouts over for Ankersen, and he was the key guy. he's now resigned. So there's no one really left at the club. So this summer, it's massive. They've got a shortened pre-season, and somehow they've got to completely overhaul this whole recruitment infrastructure and make sure they get it perfect. Because if they don't get it perfect, I can't see Southampton having that bounce going into the new season. So it's a huge few months for them, and they've got to turn a tide, because the last two windows have been pretty, pretty chaotic.
I mean, the obvious question is, do we trust them to get anything right? But I'm not going to go down that route, Glenn. It seems quite old school, doesn't it? Actually, you know, going and watching a player, seeing what his first touch is like, seeing if he can score a few goals, and then, you know, maybe looking at a manager that's got a decent win ratio and can put a team together. It seems it's quite an old school way of doing it, but it's worked for quite a while. You know, there's a reason why they do scouting like that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, reinventing the wheel, trying to find an edge is all well and good, but there's conventional football wisdom, which has been there for since football was played, where, for example, you can't have too many young players in the team. You know, you have to have some experience there. It does worry me that we're going off on these flights of fancy. I mean, I remember watching the YouTube video of Paul Onuachu's goals in Belgium, and you could see that he didn't have a touch. You could see he was big and slow. So someone, whoever was the manager at the time, should have been saying, I don't think he's really going to fit. Knowing what Rasmus said about, you know, about Nathan Jones when he signed him and the metrics, he's probably said something like, well, the Belgian league is the sixth best league in the world, or something daft like that. And Mislav Orsic, you know, you've just mentioned him. I mean, 30 years old, and he's played in South Korea and Croatia. So there was a massive question mark over whether he was going to be okay to play in the Premier League. You're always on dodgy ground signing players who are not quick. You know, and older players take longer to adapt. So those two have been a disaster. But I will say, in Onuachu's defence, even though he has these faults, we don't play to his strengths. What, one cross we got in against Fulham, and that's the closest we got to scoring, apart from the offside goal. But we just don't use him. You know, obviously he needs players around him. So Sellers plays him up front on his own, basically tells Walcott and Armstrong to play deeper, to cater for his sort of lack of pressing. So the quote that always makes me laugh from the whole season was Henrik Kraft saying, we have aligned departments. So like the football side and the boardroom side and the recruitment side, and it's utter garbage. You've only got to look at the, you know, we signed a player that in Onuachu that probably suited Nathan Jones' style of play. We signed Sulemana, who didn't suit Nathan Jones' style of play, because he didn't want wingers. So much money has been wasted on these flights of fancy from Sport Republic. And I get that they want to do things their way. That's their right as the owners. But if you try and do too much too quickly, I think that's where you end up in the situation that we're in. I mean, you know, they love the fact that we signed Tino Livramento for $5 million. But, you know, doubling down on that and trying to sign seven players or whatever it was.
Those deals don't happen very often.
No. And some of them work and some of them don't. And, you know, Bella Kotap's been a qualified success. Lavi has been a success. Edozi fits and starts, but nothing much really from him. So, there is a place for conventional football wisdom. It's not just about, you know, throwing everything out. But then I guess in Brentford, you know, when they were in charge of Brentford, you know, they started off in the Championship, and it's probably easier to do things slightly differently there without as much pressure and as much spotlight as they're in the Premier League. So we'll see. But yeah, they, as I've said plenty of times before, they got to start getting things right.
The other thing you'd expect to be out the door pretty soon, Steve, would be the playbook. I get the impression that that's got to go sooner rather than later, and this whole way of playing the 4-2-2-2 that's just clearly not worked, failed.
I mean, that's not really been a thing for a while, has it? I mean, even Ralph binned it in the summer last year with that sort of ill-fated attempt to switch to a back three. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of been out of the window for a while. But I mean, for me, it's not even about having one system. It's finding something that works for the players that you've got available to you, and that will, I mean, in Premier League, it's slightly more important, but in the Championship, slightly less so, because theoretically we've got better players and you can kind of just go with what you want, really. But certainly in the Premier League, you have to tailor your approach to whoever you're playing. And actually, we've done that quite well in the big in the games against the bigger sides. And we've praised Selez, and we praise the players for the way that they've set the way that the team's been set up and the way that we've played in the games against the bigger sides, because we know that they'll come at us and they'll give us space, and that exploit that gives us room to exploit on the counter attack. But we're not going to come up against very many teams like that at all in the Championship. There are going to be a lot of teams who are going to come to St Mary's who are going to say, right, lads, we are sitting here for 90 plus minutes and we will nick something. And that'll be the game plan week in, week out for teams against us next season, because that's what a lot of the Championship teams do. Anyone that's kind of outside the playoff picture, it's not going to be particularly pretty. And we're going to have to find ways to kind of crack that nut open, and how we do that, what system we play. I mean, yeah, I think that all that will be determined by who they bring in as manager. Whoever that is will, you would like to think, have an idea of either the way they necessarily want to play, or will have had a look at our squad in advance, and will be able to come up with a system that works for the players. Because I think at times you've kind of, as a manager, I think you've got to be slightly pragmatic at times, in that your preferred system won't necessarily be the best system for the players you've got available. Jones obviously had wanted to play wing backs, wanted to play long ball, and we didn't have the players that were suited to it. And yet he stubbornly kept sticking by it and telling everyone the sky was red. And yeah, it just doesn't work that way. You've got to be adaptable these days. Modern managers and modern coaches, the best ones are the ones that can adapt to the environment. And that's what we've not had for, I mean, Ralph was good at it for the first two and a half years. And basically from that Villa game onwards, kind of lost the plot a little bit. So it's not like we haven't had recent managers who aren't capable of that. And you know, just we've got to find someone who's going to get us through the jungle that is the Championship, because it's going to be a slog.
Just a couple more bits on the dire situation that we're in at the moment. Jacob, when Sport Republic came in, what, 18 months ago? They said at the time they were going to leave those that were already running the club to it, and they were going to let them get on with it. Normally in business, that doesn't really happen, does it? You might have a bit of a handover, but by and large, the directors go and new broom sweeps clean, they bring their own men in. Do you think perhaps they could have been a bit more ruthless sooner? Just it's some of the division perhaps that's going on today, do you think that would have been avoidable had they come in and said, actually, do you know what, we are going to take charge and set their stall out like that from the start?
Yeah, maybe, but I don't think it's a case of ruthlessness. It's just about being clear what actually is the strategy. Like, you know, if the amount of people that I've spoken to who have brought up that conversation and those opening interviews where they said we're not going to interview, and even Martin Semmen saying we went with them because they like what we're doing, you know, they're going to let us have it, they're going to facilitate us, but you know, we're still running the club, the direction of the club, but it's not been the case. And even now, like, I spoke to a few people last week, I say, what is the strategy, what is the overarching strategy of Sport Club? Is it to sell, to buy young players, sell them on, that, and everyone, even these people that are very close to it, they don't know. They don't know what the strategy is, because I don't know if it's a lack of transparency, but I just don't think they've ever had this experience of running such a big organisation. You know, Rasmus Anderson was at Brentford, where he was assistant. So these guys are in charge of it. What is the overall strategy? That's not been discussed or divulged with staff. So I think the thing that they had to do was set the stall out, be clear, what is the strategy, what are we trying to head? And I think it's similar to style of play. It's not about a formation, it's about having stability, having a foundation where you can build on. So you might change formations a lot, but you know what the overarching principles are. And it's the same in business, it's the same off the pitch as well. But no one seems to know. You look at the managers, it went for Nathan Jones, direct, goes high, tries to be aggressive. Then they sack him. They all decide, they all come together, let's go back to Hasenhüttl. Football. Get Jesse Marsh comes in. Oh no, it's not Jesse Marsh, because Jesse Marsh thinks, okay, they want high pressing now, but eventually at the end of the season, they're going to want to move away from it again. So within a space of 3-4 months, they've gone into three different strategies of how they want to play. Imagine that, what that is off the field as well, in terms of what they want to do off the field. Is it to buy young? Is it to buy experience? Is it to go down to Championship and work your way up? No one really seems to know. So I'm hoping the next couple of weeks, Southampton fans see what the vision is, see what they're trying to do, see the infrastructure in place. Now, we've discussed it. We've written about this centralizing the scouting system. What are the other things that's in place as well? Because I think it was in December they made that decision to overhaul, or it got confirmed that they were making the decision to overhaul things. And the fact they were doing it at such a precarious time in Southampton's league position is a risk. So they need to, first of all, before they do anything, make any changes, they've got to have stability. They've got to have a foundation to build on. And then on and off the pitch, they can decide on what they want to do. Because right now, there's a lot of uncertainty and they've not been clear in their message.
Well, we got a statement from them yesterday, Glenn, which basically, I'm paraphrasing, but it said, we understand that significant improvement is required, which is nice of them to notice that. They're going to announce at the end of the season our immediate next steps and provide details of how the club will operate moving forward. What did you make of that yesterday when it came out? Because when I saw the club statement, I was thinking the manager's gone. This is good. We're cracking on. But no, it was a statement to say there's going to be another statement coming.
Yeah, it was really.
Like a corner flag.
Yeah. I didn't actually see it before I saw people's reaction to it. And there was a lot of people going in on it, and I thought, well, okay, let's have a little read. it was a puff piece, wasn't it? Really, it didn't really say a lot, as you said. It said the real details next week. We acknowledge that we've been relegated. That's kind of what it said. The line that seems to have triggered everybody was the bit about we fought tirelessly to the end, which is hilarious
because Rasmus hasn't been at the games. He hasn't seen it.
No. But I mean, just. Just out of interest, as a little diversion, did you see Leeds' performance against Newcastle yesterday? Well, they were flying into everything. It was a little bit reckless.
Junior Firpo could have been sent off five times. I know. Ridiculous.
But the fact was is that they looked like they cared.
They were fighting tirelessly. Yeah.
Yeah. And Allardyce is, at the end of the day, a proper manager has gone in there. And they were a team that were accused of not trying a few weeks ago. And, it's so to say that we were, fighting tirelessly was hilarious. But yeah, you could have accused it of being generated by ChatGPT or something like that. it didn't really say much. And even if it had, words are cheap, aren't they? You know, especially when they come from basically faceless people who you don't have any access to and you don't really get to talk to. Or hear from. So the statement on its own was a nothing, really. And you've got to see what they say in a couple of weeks' time, and more importantly, what they do in the 10 weeks or whatever it is before. So when does the season start? August the 4th or something?
First weekend of August. Yeah, it's less than 90 days to get it all sorted. Yeah.
It's not long, is it? It's 12 weeks or something. So, that's when... That's when we see if the words are hollow or whether they actually lead to anything.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
We should probably just touch on the game briefly, Steve. I'm going to let you
sum
this up.
It was crap.
I mean, yeah. Win or you're down was the headline. And we managed one shot on target. So, I mean, it kind of sums up the season, really, doesn't it? I'll be honest, I was expecting a bit of a more gung-ho, kind of Forest-esque approach, but apparently not.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of what we said in the preview, wasn't it? That now that it's effectively down, we kind of expected, the pressure's off, it's fine. They'll go and produce this ridiculous, open, free-flowing attacking game and everyone will be, even though we'll be disappointed that we've been relegated, everyone will at least come away from the Fulham game entertained for basically more or less the first time this season. And yeah, what we've got was not that. I mean, Good God, that was grim.
How many hours? No one can ever question your dedication. How many hours did it take you to get there on the coach yesterday?
So, with train strikes, I got a National Express from Victoria down to Southampton. That was 3 hours on the road. I mean, it took an hour to get out of London. And yeah, it was just soul destroying. Basically,
we can't question your dedication, though, can we?
I took
20 minutes to drive from Edge End. That was too long.
it's just not fun.
One to forget.
Very much so.
Jacob, is there any inspiration we can take from Fulham? Because I was looking, they've been relegated, twice in the past 4 years, I think, showing signs that actually, for a time they were like up and down. It was them and Norwich, wasn't it? Up, down. And maybe we can get a bit of inspiration from them and try and be, I never thought I'd say this, but be more Fulham.
Yeah, they're probably a little bit more experienced and streetwise in terms of knowing how to bounce straight back up. And they probably were a little bit more stable than Southampton are now, although I like to think that the seas will calm a little bit. But I think you can take inspiration from the manager they appointed, because you think Marcus Silva's stock, especially in England, was quite low when he came to Fulham. You think, okay, he might do the job in the Championship, but then when he gets to the Premier League, he'll get found out. Like, perception would have you believe at Everton, at Watford. But he's shown that he's got a style of play. Players are confident in it. And everyone that's being bought because of the hierarchy is improving that team. And as a result, they're managing to completely change their mindset of being a yo-yo team, and one that's fighting in this mini league, almost in the middle of the table, to get as high as they can. It's the same with Aleksandar Mitrovic as well, in terms of his renaissance. So you have to look at him, but you probably have to look at the other examples of rocky clubs going down with everything up in the air and seeing how they bounce back. It's going to be a difficult job.
It's all about the manager, isn't it, really, and getting that right. So I'm just going to ask you, we were talking last week about how it would be great if we just threw everything we had at someone like Graham Potter. So not surprising this week that the name that's linked is Russell Martin, someone that I'd never heard of.
God.
Bit of research today. Was it 19th and 13th with MK Dons, 15th and 10th with Swansea? Not a great win ratio, so sounds perfect.
His team plays like the most passes in Championship history or something like that. They are pass. Oh, look, someone's out-muscled us. Oh, look, the ball's in the back of our net. So perfect for us, really.
Yeah, they average high. Like, I watched a lot of them last season, and they are adamant and steadfast in playing out from the back. It was ridiculous how many risks they would take, but they would have a lot of good technical players. Flynn Downs came on leaps and bounds last year for China, signing from Ipswich. So in terms of growing players, he's done a really good job, and he hasn't got that much money. There's a bit of discord with the Swansea hierarchy right now. So I think he's done good. It's probably a similar appointment to Nathan Jones in terms of building from the ground up, but he plays far better football. He's a lot more dynamic, and yeah, he's one of the many managers Southampton have looked at, but I would probably say he's probably in the mould that they'll go with, because if you're looking for this all-consuming, omnipresent manager, I think you'll be mistaken, because I don't think Sport Republic, in terms of how they want to work with the hierarchy of Jason Wilcox having more say as a director of football coming in, that they want a manager that's going to be really dominant and having his say. They probably want someone that's going to work within the guidelines and have a real clear alignment, as they like to say. So Russell Martin would probably be quite clear, because one thing is for sure, Southampton want to move possession base next season. So you talk about the playbook, it's been used throughout the academy. It's still a big thing in the academy. It's just where that gets changed, where there's less emphasis on pressing. And now let's be a really heavy possession team, because in a Championship, I think they're looking at it, it's a slog, Tuesday, Saturday. Having more of the ball will hopefully be more sustainable and hopefully be more consistent in terms of having results that will be more successful.
So what you're saying is it's not going to be Brendan Rodgers or Graham Potter, that kind of ilk?
I wouldn't think so, no.
It's good to manage our expectations.
I think Potter kind of fits into that mould, but his stock is much higher than we're likely to be able to attract. But, I mean, at least if that is genuinely the case, that they're looking for essentially the sort of sporting director with a head coach reporting into them, type model, which I think most clubs generally are these days, until they get to the point where they panic and appoint Sam Allardyce, then I mean, I kind of take that as a positive, because at least that means that Steven Gerrard and Frank Lampard will be nowhere near our dugout.
Out of the picture. Yeah. I want to preview the Brighton game just quickly. Glenn, I'm going to
God, that's
if you don't
want
to this. Yeah, the reverse fixture in December was probably the game that felt like the start of the Nathan Jones tenure as manager, because I know he did the Liverpool game, then the Cup game. Needless to say, we lost 3-1 and Lallana scored that soft header. And I think we changed formation about 30 times that game.
Yeah.
We're both in very different situations now, but after their result against Arsenal, it's going to be a tough one.
Well, I remember last week they got tanked 5-1 by Everton, didn't they? Which has obviously shaken them up a bit, and they've won today at Arsenal and handed the title to Man City. Not that they needed it handing to them anyway. They've had a brilliant season, haven't they? They're the same sort of place where we were in 2016, and I always found it interesting that Tony Bloom, who I think is still their chairman, always held us up as a model to follow back in the day, and he's obviously, you know, he's taken that and run with it. They've already survived, you know, losing players this season. They've lost Trossard and Bissouma at various points of this season, but replaced them with, you know, Mitoma and Caicedo, who are two excellent players who've done really, really well. They'll probably lose Caicedo this year. They'll probably lose McAllister. They might even lose the manager. But they already seem to be sort of like churning things around, bringing new players in. So yeah, fair play to them. They've done absolutely, absolutely brilliantly this season. And it was no surprise to me that they beat Brighton today. Beat Arsenal today.
Yeah.
No surprise at all. And they won't have to play that well to beat us, obviously. So it could be horrible. I mean, we usually get a decent result there. I don't think...
We're in a Premier League game there. Way that they've not lost a Premier League game at St Mary's.
Yeah, it's a weird stat about the away team always doing well. But I'm sure that record will end.
Yeah. we're in generous mood.
Next Sunday.
Technically, we're not a Premier League team anymore. So,
oh, yeah, I guess. So, I mean, I personally think the only way, if you assume we're not going to win... which I think is a pretty safe assumption, the only way we'll get something out of it is giving some of the youngsters a game. You know, not eight of them or anything like that, but get one or two in there, at least on the bench or at least on the pitch at some point, and only pick players who you can trust to put in a performance or that are going to be here next year. So, you know, for example, I mean, if it was me, I'd be having a word with people and just saying, are you intending to be here next year? Because if you ain't, I'm not going to play here. So, I mean, I'd like to see, I mean, even James Bree, give him a game, or Lewis Payne. And then you've got, and up front, we've got absolutely nothing to lose because our forwards are useless. So give Kamari Doyle, Don Ballard minutes. Let's get him in. Ward-Prowse still plays, obviously. I'd like to see Romeo Lavia given a rest. It's just, we've been flogging him to death. We're now relegated. Give him a week off and then, you know, put him back in the team against Liverpool for the last game. But I'd just like to really like to see it shaken up a bit. But missed the defensive, I'm sure, probably won't do that. And we'll probably turn up and have the same old crap out on the pitch that we've had in the last few games.
He was hinting at it this week, Jacob, wasn't he? He mentioned that the last couple of games might be an opportunity for some of the B team players. I thought we might have seen a few more yesterday, and I kind of hope that we would have done. But surely this is the perfect opportunity now, two games to go and nothing to play for.
Yeah, it's. I think you've probably got to look at Don Ballard and Kamei Doyle at the forefront. If they don't get opportunities, then will they be here next year? You've probably got to show them that there's a pathway, you know, that they can get game time. And considering that there's currently two chain rooms at Staples for the first team a couple of months ago under Jones because of the divide, but also because there's just too many first team players, imagine having to fit a few more players in as well to train this week. It's going to be pretty problematic.
It's interesting that the same very specific problem has affected both Saints and Chelsea this season, where they've literally had an extra dressing room installed. Mad.
It's very similar the way the clubs have gone, really, just relative to their size. But yeah, I think for me, Don Ballard and Kamei Doyle, you have to look at, and I completely agree. You look at the players that are probably likely going to be here next season. It's not whether a case of asking them, are they going to be here next year? Because a lot of them will probably say, speak to my agent. It's probably who you think. So it could be Gavin Bazunu in goal coming back in, James Bree coming back in, you know, Jan Benrick, you know, staying in that team. So yeah, I think there's a lot to do, but I wouldn't be surprised if he keeps it to players he trusts. So that sees a case of Adam Armstrong, how did Elie Yunusi come in as well for his last two games.
What's the point? But I mean, you know, that I know you're speculating, but that actually makes me angry to think I might have to watch those two again because they're useless. Trust them to do what?
Press.
Trust them to do nothing. They do nothing. They're garbage. I mean, are they going against Fulham? Oh, sorry, I'm off on one now.
That's all right. Let him go. Let him go.
Go on.
So we had another episodes of Seller's sensational substitutions, didn't we? So at the end of the game, we ended up with Sekou Mara.
Sounds like a far show.
Adam Armstrong, Elyounoussi, and Moussa Djenepo. What was Moussa Djenepo smoking at halftime? He came on, ran around like an idiot, tripped over, crashed into someone, should have got booked. And honestly, why are we still giving these jokers minutes on the pitch? It's unbelievable that as a Premier League football club, you know, I know we gave Moussa a new contract. That was another great decision, wasn't it? But I don't know, and he actually ended up at left back, didn't he, for 5 minutes after he took Maitland-Niles off, who actually wasn't that bad yesterday. And just, you know,
The signs are all there, aren't they?
Some of the decisions unbelievable. So Joe Aribo will play against
the Tombola.
Just what you need in a game that's going to be full of pace.
What I want to know is, of course, you two are going, which I think is excellent. I just want to know, what's the fancy dress? Are you both dressing up?
depending on how quickly it deteriorates, I'll be dressing up as a blue seat.
I did see clowns discussed today, which I thought was quite interesting and could be quite fun. But
yeah, I mean, it's one of those though. If the weather's like it's been today, that'll be a horrible sweaty mess that nobody needs to bear witness to.
2,500 sweaty clowns. Right, going to do score predictions from you, Glenn. Score prediction for the Brighton game, please.
Southampton 0.
Okay.
What should we have? 3-0 to Brighton.
3-0 to Brighton. Okay. Steve?
4.
4. I thought 4 as well, actually, but then I wrote mine down whilst I was watching the Arsenal game this afternoon. I
mean, if they're even half as good as they were today, then we're in a whole world of trouble.
Yeah. And Jacob,
do you know what? I get a lot of people mocking me for my predictions and saying how, you know, I'm bottom of the league or whatever. But I don't know if people realise, but since January, I've not really taken it seriously. I've just gone for Samsung every time. So for that reason, yeah, exactly. I'm going to change tack again. I'm going to go for a Brighton win, but I think Ward-Prowse is going to get a free kick. I just hope he's
please. That's the only thing we want to happen now, isn't it?
Exactly. That's what we're playing for.
We've not even got one within like 40 yards of goal.
Because they're wise to us now, aren't they? Everyone's wise to it.
That's all Saints have got. Yeah, don't give away any free kicks and sit back and wait for them to mess up in defence. That's it.
Yeah. So I'm going to go for a 3-1 defeat.
3-1 defeat. All right, thank you. Safe travels to everyone that's heading down there. I did see someone this week said that they found the podcast a useful part of their grieving process and have done this year. So I really hope that the last 55 minutes has helped in some way. And don't forget, you can always get in touch with us during the week because there's another couple of weeks still to come. You can follow us as well on the socials. Of course, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter. It's at Total Saints Pod. The website is totalsaints.co.uk. There's a link to the online shop there as well. We're also on Patreon, where you can support the podcast with a monthly contribution. It's patreon.com/Total Saints Podcast. There are 4 tiers, and that's T-I-E-R-S. Someone said it should be crying tears because that would be more relevant. But there are 4 tiers on there, ranging from £5 to £20 per month. Each of the tiers comes with its own perks, including the weekly shouts, of course, to those patrons in the Francis Benali and the Mick Shannon tier. So thanks to Dave Melton, Mark Atkins, Matt Hall, Andy Hollis, and Anthony Thompson in the Francis Benali tier, and also Colt Baker, Dave Ernsberger, Ed Busy, Nick Higston, Phil Cook, Matt Rose, and Nick Reed in the Mick Shannon tier. Cheers, Glenn. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Jacob. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you again next week.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.